And I watched Chocolate.
Oh, the Johnny Depp film. Oh, how nice.
Ah, made that joke at the weekend.
That'd be chocolat, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's I forgot the E.
No E. And all French and that.
Mm-hmm. So no Swedish connection for this podcast, then, as it was directed by Swedish directors.
No.
No.
No. You're the only Swedish connection there can be.
And it's too much already. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Mike, go ahead.
That's when you two stop sitting around. Yeah, I watched the Thai film, Chocolate, directed by Pratyut Pinko, who did Ong Bak and Tom Yong Gung.
Mm-hmm.
About an autistic girl. Well, I think she's supposed to be autistic. That's what it says in the blurb, anyway, but I mean, I'm not a massive expert on autism, but I've met some autistic people. They weren't like that. But anyway. an autistic girl whose mom was connected to some gangsters. And then as she grows up, her mom falls ill. Was it, I think, with cancer, if I remember rightly. Never totally explained. I'm pretty sure it's cancer. And her friend discover a book which contains debts that are owed to her mom. So they decide to raise money for her treatment to take this book and go and collect the debts. Now, the friend is just a little bit comedy fat boy. So he's not much use. But the girl, probably, I don't know if it's because of her autism, never fully explained, or just in general, she's got some ability to kind of learn things by watching it. So she sits watching Tony Jaa films, and although they don't show it, probably because they haven't got the clearance for the clips, Bruce Lee films. And she's in one fight scene in an ice factory, which I'm sure was on purpose, starts dropping the kind of noises.
Yep.
And also, she, luckily for her, she happens to be live next to a Muay Thai school, so she watches them practicing their Muay Thai and then practice it herself and becomes absolutely kick ass at Muay Thai.
In a montage, right?
Yeah. Even a monk, even Rocky had a montage.
Exactly.
He's lost his train of thought.
And she eats chocolate. Although, you know, I know the link between the title and her thing for chocolate, it's not. Let's not get into it, because I'm going to get straight down to the beef. This film is terrible. Well, if you've watched Tom Yong Gung, then there's a good chance you'll agree that that movie is terrible. If it wasn't for Tony Jaa and Panaritacroy, and the crazy stunt team rescuing that film with some, you know, just insane stunts and action, the film would be nothing at all, absolutely nothing. There's the story, the acting, the writing, everything about that film blows. And it's not, I don't think it's much different with Chocolate. A really weak, dull, floppy first act. Doesn't really get much better by the second act, but at least the pace starts to pick up with the fights. Although, to be honest, a lot of the fights weren't thrilling me. It was kind of like a stiff, slow, Jackie Chan, Tony Jaa light kind of scenes. Didn't feel like there was a lot of conviction or real energy put into them for the last 25, 30 minutes of the film, where it just becomes just a shower of violence and action. And the intensity and the pace and everything about it increases and gets far more exciting, far more bloody.
That because you ran out of chocolate?
Yeah, yeah. Somebody ate her last M&M and she got well pissed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's, you know, it's full of little illogicalities. I might have just made up a new word. And just moments where you go, what? Nah, that makes sense. No, I wouldn't do that in the first place. Nah, that's rubbish. Oh, right, so that's worse. No, no, you'd never get it from that. Just constant things like that that are just, you know, thinking, oh, that's just bollocks. The acting's bollocks. Everything about it is just bollocks, except for the last 30 minutes of just serious, serious action.
And does that turn around a verdict in any way? A poor verdict to an okay verdict overall? Or it's inexcusable to be that terrible and still, despite giving you, you know, the action mayhem during the finale?
Tough call. I can't see myself watching the film again, despite how good the ending was. But I'd happily watch the ending again, but I'm not really the kind of person who skips through just to watch action scenes.
Alright, last normal movie watch, Ken?
So, I turned to old-timey Harvest, A Man Called Tiger. And it's directed by Lo Wei, starring Yimmy Wang Yu, from 1973. And if you enjoy seeing Yimmy Wang Yu bash his way through a movie with the kind of intensity that wasn't so much about skill, but about grit, because Yimmy Wang Yu wasn't a martial artist. He just boxed his way or kicked his way through movies, but he was really good at doing that. And if you like that, A Man Called Tiger sporadically offers up that likable fighting presence when in action move, but mode. But when Lo Wei is directing the actual story of the film, then the movie takes a nosedive. And basically, Yimmy Wang Yu plays a Chinese man in Japan who enters a local Yakuza group in order to revenge his father's death and earn back some trust fund money that some Japanese gangster has stolen. Sounds easy enough, but Lo Wei wants to his plot to be trickier than that, and starts to add characters, and eventually you don't know what the hell is going on, because there's no distinction in characters. Who's that guy? Who's that girl? What is the connection to that guy between that girl? You just don't know. He thinks by lining up everyone in the frame, then he gets away with it. And it's kind of basically how you describe Lo Wei's direction. He was never a good director. As we've discussed, he may have a place in cinema history, you know, making The Big Boss and Fist of Fury, but he was never the star of that film, of those films. Bruce Lee, obviously, will forever shine more than Lo Wei. And for A Man Called Tiger, Lo Wei uses his shining star quite infrequently. There's not enough batching, but when it is, it's very watchable. So it turns out to be a complicated movie, and on home video, matters are even more complicated for A Man Called Tiger. So pen and pencil paper, and see if you can follow this complex running time history that A Man Called Tiger has. So it was issued on Joy Sales VCD not long ago. And that's the Hong Kong cinema version that is about 100 minutes, okay? Which is in itself 25 minutes longer than the American English dub version, which is then about 74, 75 minutes. And that English dub version was also in Chinese Once Upon a Time on VHS in Hong Kong. So very much shorter on in one version. But then there's a longer version released in Taiwan, which was 114 minutes. Okay, so 100 minutes Hong Kong cinema version, then there's a 114 Taiwan edit, which is also available on VHS in America, dubbed in Cantonese. But then when you come to the DVD section, because this has been released in Japan by Fortune Star, and remember Joy Sales, they handle Fortune Star, and the VCD is a Fortune Star print, but the DVD version is 74 minutes long. VCD 100 minutes, DVD 74 minutes. But it's not the same as the short English dub version. It's a different edit than the equally long English dub version. So people who want to put the English dub on the DVD, they can't. Because it's all over the place. And there might be an advantage to the film being shorter, actually, but in the end, I liked it because Yimmy Wang Yu. I just like seeing him do do his thing, and it's a modern day effort, if I didn't mention that. So it's a break from the period thing, a break from his trademark a beard, one on Swordsman and other flicks. But A Man Called Tiger. Recommended. See it in bursts rather than the full 100 minute, because it's a rather slow movie.
Right.
So, could you please repeat everything about the home video running time, Stu? Running time, Stu, if you made the notes.
It's all fucked up. That was the general
Well, some are right, Stuart. Well, with the Taiwan tended, with a few films anyway, not to be uncut, but to add extras for the Taiwan, kind of for the local market, didn't they?
Yeah.
So the 114 wouldn't necessarily be an uncut version.
Exactly.
It's a longer version.
Which is an annoying thing online when sites sell, let's say, the uncut version of Hard Boiled, which is in fact just the Taiwan edit, which I think they used as sort of a testing ground. They released movies in Taiwan first and trimmed it based on feedback in that territory. At least it's true for some movies or some era, let's say 80s and 90s, which is kind of interesting. Because it's not a matter of they just shorten scenes, they rearrange stuff. In Hard Boiled, there's the hospital evacuation at the end of the film is a differently edited scene in the Taiwan edit, but not so much, you know, 10 minutes longer with exclusive footage. It's just a different a different edit.
It might just be a shot of Chow, in fact, drinking coffee on set.
It actually was not, but no. Good guess. But yeah, that's it.
Okay.
What happened to your last movie watched, you? You haven't even watched a movie.
That's what I was saying, I haven't watched either. Like, either a Tony movie or a last movie normal.
I thought you meant either Tony.
No. I've just never got around to it this week. I've been, like, indulgent in Arrested Development because I got the DVDs for Christmas.
Awesome. One of my favourite shows ever. Movie comes out this year or next year?
Yeah, I'm kind
of...
See, that's the thing, is that maybe it's far too late for that.
Wait a minute.
Like, getting them all back to do a film is like... Yeah, but what if it's past it? Because the TV shows are great, but...
Nah, it's going to be amazing, I can't wait.
I'd have to see a trailer first before I could get excited.
It's just... it's going to be good. I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just too much talent for it not to be funny. I mean, it might not be up there with the best stuff from Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeffrey Tambor, who was in the Larry Sanders Show as well,
yeah,
and Jason Bateman and Will Arnett, who plays Job. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's, everybody in that show.
It's David Cross who plays Tobias. He's the guy that fucking kills me.
He's amazing.
When he's telling them, like, just listen to what you're saying. Please record the things you say because it's just terrible.
If it means we're taking a chubby, I'll suck it up.
And the moment we're. Like, what was his last words? He's like, I'm afraid I just blew myself. I think we have to hook Ken up with some DVDs.
Have you seen Arrested Development, Ken?
I'm still out of the Arrested Development thing. You know, it's always the same with TV shows. I can't be fucking bothered to follow them when they're on TV. Because that's too much hassle nowadays. So I just wait until I can get a rental or a box set and just indulge in it that way.
Yeah.
Even though I know nothing of a show, let's say Californication, which I'm a fan of Dave Duchovny, and want to see that, then there's sex in that show.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of that.
But I still, you know, I can't be bothered to check in every week. That's just nowadays too much hassle. So, gather it up in a way. And I can't be bothered to download either, to find, like, you know, the best rips.
You mean you find them by mistake on your computer, like me? But yeah, I'm just scrolling through the internet now. The film must be getting some sort of hype behind it because it got ranked in the number 3 in the top 15 movies for geeks for 2009 by CNN. So this ranked in at number 3. So
what's number 1 and 2?
Let's see. Da-da-da-da-da-da. It was probably going to be Star Trek or something. Let's see. Oh. Get advertisements. Oh yeah, that Fanboys is number 1.
Fanboys?
Yes.
Oh. Never heard of it. What's that about?
Well, that's another film that has been delayed, like, for years, where basically 4 hardcore Star Wars fans tried to actually break into
Skywalker Ranch?
That's it, yes. So they could actually get to see a copy of Episode 1 before it's released.
That sounds like it's going to suck so badly.
It actually looks really good because I've been following this one. and it's got like probably a good half a dozen celebrity cameos. Like even William Shatner appears in it, and it's, I think it had like Seth Rogen before he was famous. It actually shows you how far this film's been delayed. Because even like Jay and Kevin Smith have brief cameos, but they're credited as Jay and Guy from Die Hard 4. And it's got...
Dancers.
Yes. So it's got that Dan Fogler and Jay, someone. And one of the guys that... Nah, can't be bothered talking anymore. Yeah, so...
Well...
But right enough, Dragon Ball is in the list of most... Well, in the geek list. Fuck it, I'm going to read it, the list of the top 15.
You got your list! You
films.
Got yourself a list!
Mm-hmm. At number 15, we have Street Fighter, Legend of Chun-Li. Let's give this a yay or nay rating on each film.
Night.
Number 14, Inkheart.
Night.
Yeah. Number 13, The Witchblade.
Don't know what it is.
Yeah, me neither, so nay.
12, Astro Boy.
Nay.
At number 11, G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra.
What the fuck?
Double nay. That looks terrible watching the trailer for that.
It just looks like pure adrenaline. Number 10, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Night.
Number 9, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen.
Hands in the first one. Night.
That's number the first one. I don't care for sequels that make.
Mm-hmm. Number 8, Terminator Salvation.
Yay.
Yeah,
what, so you could just see the Christian Bale outtake.
What the fuck?
You walked in.
You have something to say to this prick? That's my favourite line. I love the way McGee's in the background going, "What? What? I don't know anything. What?"
I've just had a bad week. Shut the fuck up!
He says something like, "Ah, oh, this guy's a fucking asshole," and you hear McGee go, "Fair enough."
What? I'm gonna rip your fucking tape and shove it up your ass and feed them to your grandma and a fucking. That was Batman. Who do you think you are?
Terminator's really cool. The future world's really cool. And what I've seen from the trailer and stuff, it actually looks quite good.
Yeah.
Directed by McGee.
Yeah, I know.
That doesn't inspire confidence, to be honest.
A.K.A. Joseph McGinty. Nickel. He's got two second names. It's like he's turned his wife's name on.
Professor Joseph McGinty McNichol. A.K.A. McGee.
Yeah. Which just makes him sound like a McDonald's promotion. Anyway. So, number 7, Star Trek.
Oh, I think that looks dumb. Nay.
Ken?
The movie's kind of okay, but I don't care really about Star Trek, so nay.
Yeah. Number 6, X-Men Origins, Wolverine.
I'm a Marvel fan, I like comic books. I'll give it a yay.
Wait, that means there's a conflict between Mike and Ken. Surely no.
Well, what is this, a 6th X-Men film? Can they really do that many more?
Well, I think they're hoping to. Yeah. Number 5, our favourite, Dragon Ball Evolution.
Yay!
Yeah, that looks so bad that I want to watch it, so I'm going to give it a yay.
Mm-hmm. Number 4, Watchmen, which I think a film that's been... Everyone's been waiting to see.
Yeah, well, I absolutely love the graphic novel. Well, the comic book. So, yeah. I'm a bit perturbed by the changing of the ending, but I'm going to give it a yay.
Okay.
I don't know anything of it, but I know everyone loves it, so worth a rental. So yay. Because I won't be seeing it at the cinema, so I'm not that keen.
And as I said, number 3 was Blood the Last Vampire.
Yay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And number 2... Caroline.
You mean Coraline?
Yeah, that's it.
It's written by Neil Gaiman.
Mm-hmm.
And directed by the guy who did Nightmare Before Christmas, is it? No, that's Tim Burton. He worked on
Henry
Nightmare
Selleck.
Before Christmas or something. So one of the animators.
Yeah, sure. I'll go with that. I'll believe you.
I'll give it a yay.
Okay. And of course, number one was Fanboys.
Fanboys?
Yep.
I wonder if it's Fanboys that keeps delaying the film because they have, you know, they have an opinion on
it. You got all your references wrong.
Is that the one I sent you a clip of last week, which is Harry Knowles being played by
the dude from My Name Is Earl?
Jason Lee?
No, his brother.
Oh, big guy.
The big guy.
Yeah. Beating the nerds up and testing them on their nerdishness.
Yeah, I think we spoke about that briefly.
I don't know anything about it until I'd seen that clip, because I was on Ain't It Cool reading the news and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The clip looked rubbish, so I'm going to give it a 9.
Yeah, because, let's see, this had a trailer for, like, coming soon when Clerks 2 came out on DVD. And it was expected, like, a month later after that DVD had came out. And then it got delayed shitloads because I think they had to edit out an entire storyline. Because I think it was actually how the four guys is going to storm the Skywalker Ranch. But originally, they were going to do it because one of the friends was dying with cancer. And I think some people think that was a little bit dark.
Storming Skywalker Ranch just reminds me of South Park.
Oh, no.
Gonna get the print.
Yeah, a brilliant episode. A difference maybe between the Hong Kong Film Awards and something like the Oscars is kind of what I've just mentioned, what you were saying, about different genres being recognised. So Stephen Chow won 2002 for Shaolin Soccer. I think he got Best Actor.
That's right.
Right, the one that springs to my mind, you know the film The Mask with Jim Carrey?
Yeah.
See, now I really like that film. I thought it was really funny and enjoyable. Mm. And Jim Carrey is awesome in that role. Right, can you imagine another actor pulling off the role as well as he did?
Because no,
I can't imagine anyone doing that. It was a completely kind of virtuoso type performance that just, without him, the film was pretty much nothing. But he carried the whole thing. But he's not ever going to get any kind of sniff of an award for that. Because it's kind of, you know, seen as lowbrow comedy. Mm. And not worthy enough. Whereas, I'm not saying, you know, Shaolin Soccer is lowbrow, but, you know, it kind of is sometimes. And it's like, you know, a fun, kind of silly, goofy action comedy. But it's not looked down upon, obviously, at the Hong Kong Film Awards, because Stephen Chow can still roll away with some silverware. Mm. Which seems right to me.
And it's not due to, even though the production rate is lower, it's not due to them running out of movies and actors to nominate either. So it's a genuinely, you know, an open thing for them to, you know, welcome any movie that had something to offer. Light, light, dark, grey, black, whatever. Anything else you would like to add, Stu?
No, I'll just say I agree with everyone. I think that seems like a good answer. Well, to cover my own ass for now.
By the way, the only sort of evidence of what we were just talking about, a light movie like The Mask ever having a shot at the Oscars is, I guess, the best animated category. The best animated movies at the Oscars is not, they're not Holocaust movies, you know.
Well, yes. Yeah, but that's only because they're framed in a small category.
Yeah.
You know, it's animated movies, so there's only a certain amount of animated feature films they can pick from. They've got theatrical releases in the time frame. Mm. And then there's only a small amount that are actually any good.
And the best Oscar goes to Pixar for the 15th year in a row.
Well, did you see any of the Oscars?
No.
Jack Black was introducing the animated award, and him and Jennifer Aniston were doing some really stilted wooden dialogue with each other. But he said, she said something about, you know, does it pay? He says, oh, it pays much better to do animated films than it does live action. And she was like, oh, why? And he said, well, you know, I get paid, and then we come to the Oscars, and we get, you know, nominated, and then I just bet all my money on Pixar winning. And obviously then, straight afterwards, Pixar walk off with the award.
I remember now, a few years ago, I was watching an interview with Dennis Leary, where he was complaining about, you know, the length of the Oscars. and sort of, why do we have to put up with these, like, the best makeup categories? And like, the geeks come up on stage and, like, cry for 10 minutes about them winning. What they should do is equip the people in the front row with blow guns or whatever, and with tranquilizer in them. And whenever someone, you know, goes over time, just shoot the dart straight into the neck. And someone comes on stage and pull them out to avoid the show being too long. And what would happen is that everyone would be afraid of going on stage. So they'll just take the Oscar and thank you, good night. And also open bar was his suggestion, because that was the year Julia Roberts won for Ekin Brockovich. So he would like to see her stumble up on stage. That's about fucking time, bitches. Like Russell Crowe. But that one
would make it more entertaining.
But going back though to the Flying Guillotine, Master of the Flying Guillotine, the Yimmy Wang Yu film, that kicks major ass, and that's like one of the more famous ones, I guess, using that particular weapon. It's like Fatal Flying Guillotines. There's either one or two sequels to a Flying Guillotine. The second one, I think, stars Dick Long. I think it's unrelated, but I can't say for sure. Just feels unrelated since it stars another one, another actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Flying Guillotine pops up in quite a lot of stuff. There's also Fatal Flying Guillotines.
It's kind of strange though, from, I think, from movie to movie, or the longer they featured it in 70s martial arts cinema, it seemed to get more bulkier, the actual prop.
Right.
Heavier and less cool in a way, because I like the like deadly looking lampshade that it basically is. I think that's, you know, the Flying Guillotine and Master of the Flying Guillotine, I think they got it right in those films. And in Master of the Flying Guillotine, it's operated by a blind master, which is very cool.
I was gonna say, have you seen either of the two? Because it's Flying Guillotine is kind of a loose trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
With obviously Flying Guillotine 2, which hasn't got Chen Quan Tai, but I believe it's got Di Lung in it. And the third would be Vengeful Beauty. Which
are they unrelated?
Well, I think Flying Guillotine 2 is an actual sequel, but Vengeful Beauty has got a bit of Flying Guillotine, but it's also directed by the same director, Ho Meng Hua. I think that's loosely third in the trilogy. So like I said, for the first 5 or 10 minutes you get some awesome head decapitation, but after that, not really. It's a good film though. And it's got boobies.
Sweet. I wonder how the Teddy Chen remake will what their approach will be. I don't think they will aim to remake beat for beat and echo a Shaw Brothers 70s film, but it's an odd beast to remake now, I guess. Especially in Hong Kong.
I could just see an avalanche of CGI.
Yeah.
CGI blood, CGI weapon.
But I think I'll watch it, because I like any time Hong Kong cinema does something that they haven't done for a long while, be it a genre, or in this case, featuring a prop. Because I would just like to see how that is, and I'm a sucker for punishment. I can watch just about anything. So, and when I'm referring to like when genres pop up again, you know, like the Forbidden Legend, Sex and Chopsticks was obviously the reemergence of the period of the period smut, which we haven't seen for a long time either. So I kind of like when Hong Kong cinema decides to do that, albeit briefly. Do you still have your top 7 list available, Mike, that you did, but obviously never made it? The Jackie Chan toys and stuff?
Yeah, I think I've scribbled it on the back of an envelope, so I should be able to do that.
Right.
Yeah, I've got it here.
Unless you have a different topic you want to do.
Or have you found more merchandise?
Yeah. No and no.
It was funny, but I was watching the documentary on him the other night, and it shows you him going about his offices and all the stuff he's designed, and he pulls out this grey umbrella with these like more lighter grey designs on it, and it's like, that umbrella kind of looks funky.
This is the one I'm most proud of.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he's designed more than one, or Mike's just still bad-mouthing a good-looking umbrella.
No, that was the umbrella. Yeah, it's not that it didn't look good. It was just, you know, boring. You know, I want a Jackie Chan umbrella. What does Jackie Chan say to you when you think of Jackie Chan? You think of, you know, slapstick comedy, balls-out action, not grey umbrellas.
It would be a lot more cool if you, like, found... It's a big toy, obviously, but, like, let's say a Rumble in the Bronx pinball game. That's the kind of stuff. Like.
Yeah.
Well, if I want umbrella, I either want a big fucking blade coming out at the end of it when you press a button, or you pull the handle to reveal a big fucking blade.
Or flying guillotine.
Yeah.
You can unleash a flying guillotine.
Yeah, pull the handle, the top of the umbrella flies off, spins around, drops on people's heads, chops them off.
Nah, I think the best one would be if you had an umbrella with a little built-in speaker and a button. When you click it, it presses the Wong Fei Hong theme.
And it would stay on a repeat after the mechanism breaks.
Yes.
Shut up! I hate you, umbrella.
Why are we wasting this gold when we're not recording, Stuart?
Well, we could always use it as a deleted conversation, where we talk more random pitch about Jackie's umbrellas. Yeah. So, Ken, you got a underrated segment for us?
Indeed I do. Spoken about before, briefly, a movie called Sharp Guns, directed by Billy Tang. It was famous for directing many Category 3 movies, and even got one of those nicknames from someone, because you could see him, his name written as Billy Bloody Tang.
That Billy Bloody Tang.
In regards to the gore in this case, and not like that sodding Billy Tang again. Mm-hmm. Based on movies like Red to Kill, Run and Kill, Dr. Lamb, especially Dr. Lamb. Before I explain more about the film, I'll run through the plot really briefly. It's about a drug trafficker called On, played by Alex Fong, from 190 Mong Kok, Double Tap, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He flies in from Holland to Macau in order to retrieve his boss's daughter, who's been kidnapped by a dirty cop called Coke. And to get the job done, he puts together a small but effective team consisting of a gun expert who can sniff gunpowder. Sniff out gunpowder. That's kind of a superhero power of his. And also S&M killer Rain, played by Anya of Naked Weapon fame. They bust out this daughter out of the police station where she's kept, but after they've done that, they're the hunted ones by both the triads and the police, so they're sort of betrayed. And so starts this double, triple, quadruple, twisty, light-hearted action caper. And for fans of Billy Tang, this is like the post-Category 3 era of his, if you will. In 2001, I believe this was made. But he showed, as we will discuss in the forthcoming Category 3 special, he showed at his darkest he could make suitable comedy. Run and Kill is a really dark example of really, really dark comedy. I think it is in general, but it's a nasty film too. But he proved he could have a little fun too during the triad boom, because he directed Sexy and Dangerous. Mm-hmm. Like the female triad with a female triad gang, and also Francis as this sort of loser triad, and he only hints at his exploitation days by the appearance of this S&M killer, but there's no, you know, it's genius in itself, but there's no over the top graphic material to go with that, but it has Anya in that role, and Anya looks stunning. She is smoking in this film, and it's the only film where she actually is made to look good. I've only seen her in two other movies, and that's The Abysmal Naked Weapon and The Era of the Vampires, a.k.a. Choi Hak's Vampire Hunters.
All right, aye.
Which is a different... those two titles are different edited films, too, actually. But Sharp Guns overall has a B-movie energy that really entertains, because no one on board takes the movie seriously and should not take it seriously. It's almost like comic book-like traits to characters, like the Anya character, and Alex Fong's tricky on. You know, he's one of those characters that's always one step ahead of things and on top of things, and he can spot every twist and the double cross that comes his way. And he has fun with this role. And at that time, I had never seen Alex Fong smile, basically. I saw him in Portland Street Blues, where he's good, but he's not a very jolly character. And this shows Alex Fong had range in a very small movie, though. And aside from some over-the-top comedy that does appear at times, I think this like B-movie fun time deserves the little underrated nod, because they have fun, and that matters for this film, and therefore you have to credit Billy Tang as a director for steering this boat very, very well. So people can still find this movie on DVD. It's out from Mayar. So I recommend you go check it out, but don't come complaining to me if you don't like it. Or do.
Forward all those complaints to you.
Yeah, but for people that's not seen the Red Trousers documentary, that's definitely worth looking into.
It was like a Robin Chu hosted, produced documentary about stuntmen.
Yeah, it was like a documentary built around this like low budget movie he was making, where it would constantly cut in and out of the movie, showing you the stunts they'd done, then it showed you behind-the-scenes footage, then it showed you a little bit of history. So, it was actually really good, because it showed you footage. I think the action was done by Ridley Choi. So they show you a lot of the stunts he's done in the past, like the ones where he falls, he jumped off the bridge, got hit by the truck, then landed on the van, rolled off the van and hit the ground.
Ridley Choi's a well-known crazy fucker.
Yeah, as well as the one where it's basically like him driving a motorcycle, then being hit by a car.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Aye.
That's from No Regret, No Return. That is, as far as I remember, that was like not as such on the crank. That looked like, you know...
Yeah,
obviously he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it slow. I mean, he had to get hit by the fucking car. But that is insane.
Definitely, that looked fucking sick. They kept showing it and like, and that cunt's still alive. Man.
The thing is, from that movie, it's like the stunt he does where he jumps from like a roof down to an ambulance and onto the ground. That really fucked him up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the so-called minor stunts. I don't think they showed any footage in that documentary or in the end credits of No Regret, No Return of the motorcycle stunt, you know, crippling him or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably just stood up, dusted himself off. Okay, I think we'll do 14 more takes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's definitely worth looking out. So, I think...
It's on DVD, actually, from Tai Seng, Red Trousers, if people want to... if they're not near a UK television channel.
So yeah.
It was on the Biography channel for an hour plus adverts, right?
Yeah, it's definitely been edited down, because I remember it being on for over an hour when I rented the UK DVD, because sometimes some Tai Seng stuff appears through like the rental websites but not actually out to buy in shop.
Yeah, which I think they're set up in the UK to some extent. They are releasing some DVDs, but not every Hong Kong
Because it basically got to the point where they're talking to the children that were still in sort of the Pekin Opera schools and how actually really upset they were because of the profession that they're basically being brought up in. Like, they don't see how they're going to like get a profitable job from the skills they're learning here and all the ones that miss their families. And then it just kind of ends. It's like, wow, what a depressing note.
Kind of the theme of Painted Faces there, only more depressing.
Yeah.